Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the
cool down.
We've got a return of a soldier from North London. His name is Matthew Waite. He was telling us about his weekend adventures in backpacker land as a 30-something-year-old man. Can't really continue. How's it going, Matt? Are you good?
I'm good. It's good to be back. Good weekend for Spurs as well. So
now, good.
Take it easy, Matty. Take it easy.
And then we've got the man who was a bit cocky last week because of the takeover. I think he's humbled down a bit. Nick, how's it going? Ah, man. You can't even hear
me. He says he doesn't speak to peasants anymore. Now he only speaks to...
It's all good.
He only speaks to big teams.
And then we've got a guy on the show who was bailed out by his goalkeeper, Edward Mendy, over the weekend. How are you doing, Musa?
Results in the back, so no complaints from my side.
Hey, as long as you're okay. And then we've got Wanga Denga, who couldn't allow his former manager to get 3 points. Not former manager, but former captain, legendary captain Patrick Vieira. He had to snatch it away from him. Come on, how are you doing, Wonga?
No, I'm good. It's not the result I wanted, but yeah, it's progress. That's what I see.
That's all good. I see.
You're lucky to have had that result, even.
Let's Sam is in the comments. How's it, Sam? Pooms as well in the comments. Sam, I guess, is laughing at the fact that Wanga and Musa are probably like sharing the same sentiments, obviously, but Musa got a 3 points, but luckily so. But yeah, I told
that's
you the
that's very different.
Team, Beware of the startup team. That's what we all said. Beware of the startup team. Let's see if Nick can get back into the stream. What's happening, Nick?
Beware of the startup team. You guys must be aware of the startup team. As we showed them, we taught them a lesson.
Okay, no, we'll get Nick.
We're very proficient and professional.
Hey. Yeah, as you guys can all see, tonight we don't have another guy called Claudio Barrero. But shout out to Christine, who ran all the way from Johannesburg to Cape Town with Mad Two Runners. It's a great organization doing, it's a charity organization, and they ran all the way from Johannesburg to Cape Town, which is 1,300 kilometers. Madness. Phenomenal. She ran a crazy shift. So let's just give her a round of applause, guys.
Yeah, that was mad.
It was crazy. I think they did it in like a span of 10 days even, which is a massive accomplishment for them.
No, definitely. Let's see if this works. Yes, and it works. You see, I'm back. Oh, wrong guy.
Except.
Yeah, there you go. Wait, don't worry. I
mean, you're using the word works there, just worry, somewhat.
Hey!
So sorry, guys. We've got our substitute teacher in class today. He doesn't know how the instruments work and the machines work.
I know everything, guys. The show is on. Nick,
we are here.
The King of the North, are you there? The King of the North, are you there?
I can't see anything. I don't know if you guys can hear me.
We can hear you. But you're not moving. You're not moving like the Newcastle right now. They've been rooted to number 19 of the log. So that's what you do right now. You're not moving like Newcastle.
Hey, man.
You're only going to start moving in like January, maybe, Chief.
Yeah, if we can get rid of Bruce, maybe that will help. So, yeah, hopefully that happens in the next couple of days.
Let's start with the weekend fixtures.
She's bad.
Let's start with the weekend fixtures, guys. I think, normally, guys, you know what happens on this show. Liverpool plays first in the weekend. And then all of a sudden we're talking about Liverpool at the end. but we can just dissect Liverpool. But we're going to give Liverpool 5 minutes, guys. They deserve 5 minutes for five goals. And yeah, did you guys watch the fixture? I think obviously the moment we can all talk about first is Mohamed Salah's goal and the raging debate about is he the best player in the world currently?
Yeah, he's look. I mean, I watched the game. Obviously, Liverpool have yassed all over Watford. I mean, Salah's pass to Mane for the first goal. You know, as soon as that went, I mean, the pass, hopeless. I mean, the defender can't get there. Only person who can get there is Salah. It's bent around him. It's inch perfect. Good finish. And then you get Salah now scoring that goal. I mean, yeah, it's, and he's doing that now for the second week running. I think now he's, you know, he's putting him outside there. He's putting his name out there saying, I mean, for sure, at the moment, current moment, he's on fire. He's on fire. Mm-hmm. He's doing things like single-handedly, assisting, scoring. He's causing problems. He's actually a menace. So yeah, but I mean, I watched the game and that was my feeling. Like, I didn't believe Watford had a chance in the beginning. I mean, before the game, and yeah, Liverpool went out there and they cleaned out. I would have thought 3-0 and they put 5. So yeah.
No, definitely. I think, do you guys think, Watford will definitely go down? You know, I think obviously it was one of the teams we spoke about at the beginning of the season. I think Matt said Watford. I said Watford. Who else said Watford? Four or five of us said.
The thing is, I must say, to Ranieri's credit, so this isn't a good example. It's his first game in charge. Liverpool were rampant. I think they would have scored 5 goals, against quite a few sides this weekend. Mm-hmm. But Ranieri normally does it right from the back. So you got to hope that if he has a chance to kind of instill his methods in the side, they'll stop conceding so many. And you also look at the squad of Watford. They don't have, you don't expect them to be finishing top 4 or whatever, but they don't have terrible players. Yeah. They're in with every shot. And I think there's a few sides who are currently bouncing around the bottom who probably feel like they've got a good chance of getting out of there. I think the relegation battle could be a really tight one. And I think in that regard, so as I did say Watford at the beginning of the season, but I thought bringing in Ranieri was really smart. I think they also did do a little bit of smart business after we had made our predictions. A couple of the people they brought in could add a bit of quality. But it is going to be tough. There's going to be a lot of football to play. They're going to have to do a lot better than they did. I mean, poor old Danny Rose, who I obviously really love. He looked well out of his depth. He got absolutely turned inside out.
Commentator called him overweight even. I was like, what?
It's not that bad. Harsh. I mean, to play professional football. Like, imagine, give me a Watford shirt. I'll show you overweight. You know.
No, that was harsh. It was harsh. You know, the other commentator calmed him around quick, and he's like, nah.
Left running off the cellar on a, you know, you're going to look out of shape compared to that. The way he's playing at the moment, he's floating a couple of inches off the ground, didn't he? You know?
Yeah. individual brilliance every single game from Mohamed Salah. I think he's showing off right now, and I think obviously we've probably touched on it before in terms of Liverpool giving him a new contract and so on. And I hear the rumors are that he wants about £400,000 a week, and I think there's obviously a big debate for Liverpool fans. Some are saying that he's not worth 400,000 rand a week because he's going to earn this amount for the next, but they're saying that he's going to earn this salary for the next 4 years and you might not really get the best out of him and he's going to leave for free. But I think a player like that deserves a salary of £400,000 a week, guys. He deserves to double his salary or at least get £150,000 more a week because he's...
I know a team that can pay that. Or double even.
But he's up fine. He's up in the north. Gulf data issues up there.
It may be a bit too soon for a player like Salah to look at Newcastle, but potentially if the Saudis can show that, you know, there is a big player that they're trying to secure and they're trying to pay those kind of fees to, I don't think he'd probably have to make the move to Newcastle if the boys pay the bucks.
The challenge for someone like Salah, because he is a little bit older, and a project like Newcastle, he wants Champions League for the next 2-3 years so that he can play Champions League in his peak. Newcastle are not going to have Champions League next season. There's no guarantee they'll have it the season after that. So someone like Salah going to Newcastle, as much as he might, I mean, obviously he'll lift them and he'll do stuff with them. He might also then be saying he's going to miss his next prime 2 years playing Champions League. So I think they're going to have to, if you think about when City first got their cash injection, they had to kind of do kind of smart deals to try and get them up to that level before they could start bringing in those big names. So I think that's why they need a manager who knows how to do this. It's not as simple. It's not Championship Manager, you know? You can't just download and I've got a billion, so I'll buy whatever I want. You've got to have a manager who's actually going to be able to do that. And I don't think it's as easy as we all think. I think the first step is definitely getting rid of Bruce. I don't think he's quite got the long-term vision. I mean, fair play to the dude, 1,000 games in charge. I mean, you know, none of us would have guessed that. So, you know, good for him. But I think, you know, hashtag time's up, as it were.
I see the comments here. We've got someone called Lord of the White Sinners, but I don't know what that is. But how's it going? and we've got Warren comments. How's it going, Warren? We've exceeded our 5 minutes for 5 Liverpool goals. My last comment is that Bobby Firmino scored a hat trick. If Bobby Firmino can score a hat trick, then you just know that your team was crap on the day.
but what this does do for Salah, right? It puts him right up there with some of the all-time highest scoring Africans to play in the EPL, which is quite exciting. And then to see like Sadio Mane just underneath him, it's like it does give a lot of plaudits for him to then be considered to be potentially currently one of the best players in the world.
Something that I can ask all of you guys quickly, right? Is Mohamed Salah the greatest ever African player to play in the Premier League? I'm going to start with Nick, Matt, and then Musa, and then Wanga, then myself. Nick, yes or no? Is Mohamed Salah the greatest Premier League, greatest African player to play in the Premier League?
It's a tough one. I think Drogba won more titles there.
Four.
So I think he's got to probably continue doing what he's doing and probably win a few more trophies until that, you know, obviously, I think he surpassed Drogba's record. Was that the record he broke?
He's on the same amount of goals now.
I don't know. I think just looking at the trophies, you know, I think you also have to measure a player's ability based on how many trophies he's won for his club. So yeah, I mean, he's right up there. I'd say probably those two go pound for pound. But Drogba was something special. So, yeah, if you said to me Salah was the best, it would be hard to argue, but I can see why people would defend a Drogba in that sense.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Nick nailed it. I think there's every reason to believe he could be. I think at the moment, probably Drogba just edges it. He may be a victim of the different systems the team plays, because Liverpool are very team first. You know, there's no one individual star. Whereas when Drogba was at Chelsea, he was very much the linchpin of the attack. So everything went through him. So you got to see him influencing the games more. So I think at the moment, probably Drogba just edges it. But if Salah does what he's doing for the next 2 years, it's going to be beyond doubt. Cause I mean, at the moment, the goal tally, Salah's ahead, but it's, you know, if he does this for two more seasons, it will be, he'll be over the out of sight, and then you won't be able to argue with it.
Yeah. Musa?
Yeah, true. I think like if you're looking at the numbers and you're looking at the amount of individual contributions he's made, it is currently fortunate to be breaking that record that Drogba held, and that is significant, you know, for an African player to break it. I just think you know, in terms of sheer brilliance and talent, there've been other great African players that have come in through the system. You know, we're talking of Drogba, who, yes, managed to do it at the right time for Chelsea. But there are other players like a striker that I think is one of the best that we've ever seen is Samuel Eto'o, and he actually played in the Premier League at some point. So, those type of strikers would be a lot more scary for me if I was facing them versus if I was facing Mohamed Salah. And, even if I was put it in context, if I was facing an Eto on top form versus a Salah on top form, I'd be much more scared of Eto.
So we're talking about Premier League top form, your best form. We're not talking about Eto as the greatest African player. No, we're talking
one of.
No, Eto's best form was in Italy and Spain. We're not talking about that, man.
I'm just saying one of the best players.
We're talking one of good seasons. I want to put Axel Okoto in there.
Exactly. No. Come on. Wonga, give us something better.
There we go.
Give us something better than Bosa. What do you think?
That was my...
No, look, I think... I think Nick and Matthew hit it there. I mean, you have to... You have to judge him by obviously what he does, what he's doing. If his position, obviously, what is it? Salah, obviously, he's there to score goals. So he's scoring goals. And then again, the cups that he's winning, the end product, that's also has to be judged on that as well. And I mean, you had guys like JJ Kocha. I mean, you can't even, yeah. I mean, the guy's brilliance. I mean, any person wouldn't want to go 1v1 against JJ Kocha. You make you look like a fool. But the question again is what did he win? You know, they'll ask him that. But respect to the guy. I'm not saying now JJ Kocha was useless, but I'm just saying now if we're going to say the greatest, if we're looking at the greatest African, we have to, put it all up just like Nick and Matt said at the moment.
I thought you were going to say Adebayo. I thought you were going
to
say.
If you're looking at a
player that maybe never scored as many goals, but probably was, you know, a really pivotal part of, Man City's success was Yaya Toure. Like,
yes,
you're right. Yeah, no, yeah.
Yaya has to be in the top three, guys. If he has to be there, then I think he is definitely like a part of the Man City revolution. Vincent Kompany, Sergio Aguero, and David Silva. Those are the guys who made Man City what they are right now. And he won
100% titles
under Mancini and under Pep. So I think, it's always a strange debate because you got Mohamed Salah goals, one Premier League. And then you've got, Drogba, four Premier League titles. And then probably, probably has three or something, but, then what holds more weight?
Well, Premier League titles. Drogba is a Champions League.
I think
Drogba is a Champions League.
Yeah, and Salah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, so yeah, three more cups.
You could definitely make a pretty amazing 11 with African players who played the Premier League. You know, you've got Yaya as a captain, you know, JJ doing some tricks there, just making us all love the game again. I think there's been
Mendy
goals.
Yes, yeah, so you could have Michael a solid 11.
Yaya's brother, Polo Torre. You know what I mean? Yeah, but let's go to the match that I'm dreading to talking about on the weekend. 4-2. You know, last week's show, I for the first time, I think in a while, I said my team weren't going to win. I predicted a draw because I foresaw problems in this game because I felt that Brendan Rodgers is a good manager. But just to get everyone else's views on the game itself, you know, I think obviously, you know, it was an up and down game. You know, Man United scored first, then Leicester got back, and then they led 2-1, then Man United scored, and then Leicester scored a quick goal to make it 3-2, and so on and so forth, you know. But I think the big moment, guys, is the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer picks Harry Maguire to start the game. Harry Maguire, in the press conference the day before, he says that, no, I'm not sure, but Harry just started training on grass today. Just started training on grass. He starts the next day.
I did not know that.
Imagine, guys. He just started training on grass today, and the next day he starts a game. And
gotta love Ole.
Guess what happens?
Gotta love
goal?
Ole.
Guess what happens the first goal? De Gea passes the ball to
on
him,
holiday.
And he's not as aware, and he lets the ball come to him, and they close him down, and Leicester score. So, guys, I that in itself just tells you what kind of a manager I have.
100%.
Watching the game, I think, I think, you know, Gary, when Gary Neville said it, he said it right. And I think even Claudio was asking the same question when the season started. He was saying, if you're playing a Ronaldo and a Bruno Fernandes together, he was saying that you're going to get problems because now you've got two players that the team has to work for. Bruno Fernandes is not coming back.
That's not true, though. That's not true. That's a lie about Bruno. That's a lie about Bruno. But it's true about Ronaldo.
Listen,
it's a lie about Bruno. You need to watch more Man United matches because I'll call out.
Gary Neville was saying that now. What Gary Neville was saying is that. Now in the team you've got play. You look at the starting lineup and you're like, no one should lose a game. No team should. I mean, a team like that can't lose a game, you know. And he's questioning also the work ethic of the players as well, because you're saying that he believed like when the time that Man United were great, he had players. He said that players like Fletcher, Owen Hargreaves himself.
I know what he said. Park.
Yeah, he said, so those guys are, they worked, you know, they worked and there's intensity about them in a game. And I'm not saying Bruno Fernandes is incapable of coming back. No, I'm not saying, Paul Pogba is incapable of that. But what I'm saying is, if you look at a team like Liverpool as well, why can't the manager get that out of his players? You know, I think it should be the manager's job to sort of get that drive out of the players. I don't think, I mean, all those players can run, definitely. Man United's team, I'm sure they're capable of playing, a high intensity game, but at times just get them. I don't know. I just feel like they're not, I don't know, maybe you'd know better, Selo, but they're just, they're not giving 100%
at times.
Man United's biggest problem, right, is the fact that,
it's all out.
I think the coaching is, You know, there's a clip that happens on the weekend, right? Where you find Bruno Fernandes pressing, right? And Ronaldo doing a half press, right? And then the problem is, right, is that the first four guys maybe press, or the first two or three guys press, right? And the problem is they play around them, right? And then the ball goes to the center mids of Leicester. Now the center mids of Leicester have the lay of the land. And now you've already minus four Man United players. So now you've got two Leicester players, and then maybe you've got the centre backs who are behind. So now you've got two Leicester players at the back, and then four Man United players with them. But that means already now you've minus two Man United players essentially, because now you've overloaded them. And that's what happened in the midfield, is that now Pogba and Matic are going to face more players coming to them. And then now it's obviously it's got better tactics. But I think that's the thing, is that the team hasn't been coached to press together. Hasn't been coached to attack together. And even Brendan Rodgers said, Man United don't play with a high intensity. So we press them high. And when you press Man United high, and that's why he played with two strikers, is that he knew he was going to press them high, put pressure on them. And he said, our team is based on making the other team make mistakes high up the field, and we take advantage and we score goals. What do they do? And they do that a couple of times.
It's very easy to see with Man United. It's been happening probably for the entire season, where Man United are trying to play the ball out well from the back. But sometimes you can see, Yuri, these guys, actually, the intensity is too low, dog. If I was – that's why I even predicted this game that is going to go towards Leicester, because looking at the Man United defenders and then considering that a Maguire shouldn't be available for it, yo, it's exciting for players like Iheanacho, Vardy, who run all day, you know, who want to squeeze these guys and make them feel the pressure the entire game. And that's a problem at Man United. There's so many defensive errors that they come from them being too relaxed and not intense enough when they are trying to build up the ball. The problem is also when they are trying to build up the ball, they don't have a serious tactical approach about what they're doing. And that's because he's shifting so many players. Like, he's got those two defensive midfielders who, in my personal opinion, don't know how to pass the ball forward well enough. a lot of the time. I haven't seen a Fred completing maybe 80% of his passes, and he's just passing. He should only be passing 5 yards, 6 yard type of passes forward. He's trying long balls from far, short balls, very close up in front of him, and he fails at that quite a few times, but he's still being selected with McTominay in the middle. And they're not the type of players to boss a game. They can go and fight the ball for you, if you need one of them to go collect the ball, but for them to boss, guys like Jorginho, you know, guys like Arsenal's midfielders or Tottenham's midfielders, it's very difficult for them. They can do this crappy job, but they can't really go in and impose themselves on the game. And then it's just difficult with the whole menu structure, and that comes directly from the top at this point in time. I wouldn't even say it's an attacker's fault. It's more the defensive issues and the fact that you have like so many of defenders and not doing it correctly.
You know, one of the things as well is that what you also realize with Man United as well is some of these players, right, when they're playing for their national teams, right, they actually start or they play in different systems and they actually flourish. So I'm going to take an example of Fred. Fred starts for Brazil. You think to yourself, Brazil's got so many great midfielders, right? Right. Brazil have this system where it's either Casemiro or Fabinho start, right, as a six. And Fred plays as a box-to-box that disrupts high up the field. So he plays as a box-to-box that supports the number 10. Number 10 is normally Lucas Paqueta. And he plays high up the field, like, you know, like how Chelsea uses like a N'Golo Kante. N'Golo Kante doesn't sit as a six. He plays high up the field, but he tries to disrupt the flow of the other team high up, and then he passes on to other players who can maybe use the ball better. And that's what Fred does.
Exactly. He's not looking for those long passes. He's not looking for, you know, the champagne pass.
He sits deep at Man United, but that's actually not what he was doing at Shakhtar Donetsk even. And we sign a player, then now we're trying to force him to play deep. Whereas at Brazil and at Shakhtar, he plays as an eight, where he's trying to block the ball. He's trying to press high up the field, you know, and be disruptive. Because Fred is actually very good. He's a very good presser of the ball, and he's very good at disrupting play up, like in terms of the other team. So then you look at Solskjaer. You're playing players out of the out of position. You know, you signed Jadon Sancho as a right winger, but you play him on the left wing. Like, how does that make sense, guys? If you sign a player to play on the right wing, but you play him on the left wing, like, and then Ronaldo wants to hit the ball, but are you crossing the ball to Ronaldo? I haven't seen Ronaldo get across. You know what I mean? You need to cross the ball. Mm. But if Jadon Sancho's on the left-hand side, Jadon Sancho can't cross with his left. He needs to cross with his right.
Can't. And Greenwood is on the right-hand side. Greenwood's going to look for the goals instead of crossing.
Greenwood's
going
to shoot. He doesn't cross. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, so Man United just got a lot going on for them. And right now we're in shambles, but we've got a match tomorrow in the Champions League. I think we obviously want to qualify for the knockout stage, which I think is very important. But the game at the weekend against Liverpool is going to be a big one as well. Let's see what he does. And if we lose in an embarrassing manner, then you know, and then yeah, man, the guy, hey man, yeah, but yeah,
I'm scared Nick, for him,
Nick,
man.
Nick, any thoughts on my coach that I was going to give you? That I was going to give you a few months ago.
This is what Ole does, though. He'll probably end up getting a result against Liverpool, and then he gives himself an extra 2-3 weeks, and the pressure's off him. But like, if Man United want to become the Man United that we all grew up knowing, he has to leave. Like, I think it's just plain and simple. You know, unfortunately, he's never going to have the stature of, you know, these big coaches in European football. And unfortunately, he's got massive boots to fill. You know, as much as you guys didn't like Mourinho, Mourinho has a history of winning titles. He's got a history of winning trophies.
100%.
You know, you've got a guy like Ferguson who did everything for you guys. So, I mean, Ole's never, unfortunately, he needed another smaller job to prove himself, unfortunately, and he got given the role. So, I mean, you can't really blame him for taking it. But yeah, I think it was too soon. It's a very similar situation to a Frank Lampard, but the difference is Chelsea acted and Man United haven't. Chelsea are flying and Man United are... Man United take two steps forward and then three steps back. It's like that, that's the sort of team they are. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they go and go and beat Liverpool this weekend. And it will just buy more time. And there was talk that there's, the police were actually, on standby for this weekend, because there's talk that there might be another, protest,
which is,
very similar to what happened the last time they played at Old Trafford. So that will be interesting to keep an eye on. Yeah, they love protests. I think personally, they need a change. It's very tough sitting in a situation where you know as a fan you need a change. I can only imagine some of those players also feel the same way. A new voice, you know, a new voice in the change room, just to, you know, those players are good players. Besides maybe Fred.
And Maguire.
Maguire and McTominay. De Gea, and Pogba. No, I'm just joking.
The list doesn't stop, my man. But you see those names that you mentioned.
Is frozen,
right?
Or is he just not talking to us?
No. I'm trying to listen to you, Coach Nick. That's your respected name. But I think
you can't take all this criticism about Man United, man. It's not.
It's the truth, guys. I can't hide away from the truth. The truth is the truth. I can't say that you guys are talking rubbish because you guys are talking. All you guys are talking facts. Man United is in a deep place, right? A deep place. We're just lucky that Arsenal didn't win yesterday because Arsenal would have been right by us.
If behind you.
You know what I mean?
Signed Varane. Varane never played. Correct. He's injured for a few weeks.
He's injured now.
So
groin injury, which could worry. Be
like,
serious.
You guys. I mean, there weren't many clean sheets. You were conceding, but like, you were still a solid unit with him. And now, as soon as you lose him, you concede four goals. Like, that is a bit of a concern.
He had to pull Maguire into the field, right? They don't have a number three defender or number four defender.
No, they do. Eric Bailly was ready. He's sitting there just waiting like this, guys. He's waiting there.
Sounds like another situation.
No, I can't believe they don't play Eric Bailly.
That shows you that. But guys, you know, that's the thing with Solskjaer that I've always had the biggest problem with Solskjaer. There's certain players, right, that he just never puts into certain situations, you know what I mean? So a situation like that where you've got Maguire who is 50% fit. You know, he's touched the grass once in 3 weeks, and then now you put him in a game against Leicester. You're not playing Norwich City here. You're playing Leicester City, guys. FA Cup champions, you know what I mean, and number five in the
guys are gonna be vying for the same position in
exactly,
the
league. You know what I mean? So
what does that tell? What is that like for me? That's when you do something like that, you're sending a message. Inadvertently sending a message to the player that is sitting on the bench. Like, guys, 50%. You go to training, you're training, you don't see this guy. You see him come the next day, like first time in a while. Then the next game, you're the only center back there. Then the next game, this guy, you can see he's not even in it. He's starting the next game.
The player that they forced in goes in to make a mistake, which is even worse. Now it's like an egg in his face.
But it's also it's also just like, look, I know the job of manager of a football team isn't easy, but there's certain things like you look at Leicester. I'm not a football manager, but I look at Leicester. I know what they're going to do. They're going to use their speed. Jamie Vardy's going to run behind you 100 times, and then you got Maguire, who's not fast when he's fully fit, and put him at 50% and then expect him to keep up with something like that. Exactly. Just at a basic level, that's just not fit for purpose. Like, you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, you look at someone like Bailly, who is a little bit quicker. Not that he's also he's not a sprinter or whatever, but he's faster than Maguire and he's fully fit.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. Mm. You put him in there. And that's at least a decision that you can defend. Afterwards, you can say, yeah, look, Maguire wasn't fully fit. We had to put Bailly in. If he didn't quite live up to it, that's that. So now he's got the situation where I trusted the player, wasn't fully fit because I've got some system in my head that only works with a certain shape of player. It didn't work. And then he said, we need more legs on the field. You had plenty of legs.
He
on
needs
the bench.
More legs. Imagine that. And then I was even listening to Pogba's comments afterwards. And now you can see actually he's lost the, he's there, losing the change room.
Yeah.
The players are coming out to say, look, dude, we tactically not all right. These guys have just come from international duty. They're tactically astute. They've been working on that quite well with their international teams, getting results. And now they're coming back and they're saying, oh, we are tactically not okay, guys. We are trying our best, but it seems like tactically we're not okay. Our coach is telling us the legs. Ooh, it's going to be the fact that you've got a Cristiano, Pogba, and players of that caliber in that change room now is going to put a lot more pressure on Ole. These decisions won't go lightly to players who want to continue to win trophies and collect accolades as they progress.
Okay. No, that's
you're gonna tell us?
Yeah. So no, let's talk about how Moses' team stole 3 points
away from the startup team. Riding there.
Shout out to Mendy. Mendy, my boy. Mendy, my boy.
The only player there. they should have just had a penalty shoot out there. Mendy only. That's it.
Just coming for 5 minutes. Watch that go. It was a game of two halves, if you ask me, man. Like, I do feel, I was impressed to see, you know, the way Loftus-Cheek and, players like that are coming to play. And it seems like they are looking sharp. They are looking fit. They are looking ready for, to be more permanent fixtures in this Chelsea midfield. It's an opportunity where they couldn't actually, you know, take on last season because they're loaned out, and to see them coming back and adding a little bit more directness going forward, adding a little bit more opportunities to take on players and show their strength was quite nice from my side. It did get a little bit challenging. There are a few players that were missing for us as well at the back. And there were opportunities which Brentford were looking to actually take on. And they did so well. I think I was expecting us to concede this game against Brentford because over the past couple of games, they've looked the part, right? They look like they have energy when they're going forward. They look like they're looking for good balls and they're taking the opportunities really well. They look strong on set pieces. They look like a well-drilled team at this point in time with a high focus on going forward and attacking their opponents, which is quite exciting to see. And it was quite something to see Mendy actually coming to the party to save the day on several occasions. Yes, he did have a great day out on the day, and he did keep Chelsea in the 3 points in the last few minutes. Yes, that's true, and I'm thankful for that because those are those type of games where you need. You know, it might be that you're back against the wall for the last 10-20 minutes, but you'd need everybody to come to the party, and he did that very, very well, which is what makes a good a team, if you ask me. When you know you don't have your usual starting back four, but you can come out and then still get the result and the clean sheet, which is very good.
Look at Sam. Hey. Chelsea escaped from the sting of the bees. Mendy definitely got stung.
Keeping, dog. And it's important to do that, you know, like that 2 points is literally going to count against us in Liverpool, right? Like Liverpool dropped 2 points against that same team, whereas us, we actually got the result through the Mendy saves.
And Arsenal lost.
But we don't think about Arsenal. Aren't they like somewhere back down there, Chief?
Yeah. We had to face them first. I guarantee any of you guys face the first, you would have lost. Yeah. You guys, the worst thing is everyone was expecting it. Liverpool was expecting it and they still conceded three. But anyways. But look, I watched the game and, look, first half, I mean, sometimes you look at the stats and you say, I mean, it doesn't really show a picture, but this one was clear. I mean, if in the first half, Brentford have 4 shots, 4 goal attempts, 2 on target. Chelsea have 4-1 on target and a goal. Second half, Brentford have 15 attempts, 7 on target. Chelsea have 7 saves. And Chelsea only have one attempt on goal, zero on target. And that's exactly what it looked like. Everything was on their side. And then, but again, what Musa said, and I agree with him. That's exactly why Frank Lampard got the guy there. Because he knew, that goalkeeper department, if you want to win things, it has to be, as good as your outfield department, you know? And Mendy for me is definitely, I would say definitely one of the best keepers in the world, Mendy. And in that game, he's proven that, you know? I would have, those two posts, I was screaming when the guys hit that post. I thought it was coming, you know, it's bound, but I did mention to you guys last week, remember, I said the only thing about Chelsea, even if they played that Chalaba at the back, is those guys, they don't want to concede. And you could see it, keeper, the four defenders again. Yes, Brentford were relentless. But again, everything, they worked. I think they hit one off the line even as well. Ball hits the post. No one is watching. They're still trying to, scramble that ball out. And fair play to them. Brentford didn't put it in the back of the net, and they did.
Okay. So anything else from a Nick perspective? I know you love to analyze the smaller teams because obviously they're the teams you aspire to be. Any views?
whoa!
I didn't watch.
Silo, sorry.
You aspire to be in the smaller teams.
There was one thing. Did you watch the game? So did anyone else watch the game besides Musa? Because I'm going to get a biased opinion here. But anyways.
I'll watch Man United's game on Saturday, but Sunday I watched the games.
Musa, did you watch the game?
Yes.
That incident with Tony, when they get the ball, they pass the ball in the box. And then who was it that gave him a wrestling move, that clothesline? Who gave him that? Who was it? I can't remember, but anyways. They gave him a clothesline in the throat. And they said he was offside. The ref blows because the line is put up a flag and says offside. But if he's not offside, it's a penalty. That's for sure. But no one goes back to VAR to check. Why? I don't know.
It was offside, Chief.
No. But you see, things like that, there would have been 1-1, and we're talking a different story. But anyways.
Because you're playing a startup, man. You're playing a startup at the startup stadium. Come on. The stadium is 2 years old.
But you see,
the stadium is 2 years old. What
there's
you
another
expect?
Thing I'd like to talk about now. Like, where's Lukaku gone? There were a couple of opportunities, or there was one opportunity where he should have buried it
He's been waiting.
Game.
But listen,
I'm waiting too long now, Doc, for something from him, right? Like we've played big teams and that's where he should be coming. We're playing smaller teams now and I'm not seeing him enough. And it's a concern for me because I'm even seeing the Lukaku of old, Doc, where good opportunities would present themselves to him and he'd look up to the sky and look up to everybody else hoping for mercy. And that's I thought we were done with those days.
I read Tuchel saying apparently he's had too much football over the past few months. Needs a bit of a break. And obviously your backup striker is Werner. So I don't think he's going to get much of a break.
Because even in the week before they rested him from Belgium because of muscle strain. So potentially that's all linked, but geez, man, this was my concern about having a player of that price tag and the accolades that he was getting because he goes missing.
But to be fair, guys, that second half, Cristiano
Ronaldo hasn't scored a goal as well in a couple of games. So what are you going to say? It happens. What must we do?
But for me, this game as well. So this game, everyone was missing. I mean, that second half, Brentford were all over them. It was ball to the second. It was ball halfway line, Brentford back again. Ball out again, someone gets the ball, Brentford get the ball again. It was literally Brentford the whole half. So, I can't.
Guys,
I would say it's a bit too harsh on Lukaku. Because everyone else was not there.
How did that happen, guys?
Yeah.
The King of the North escaped as I was about to talk about his team.
You just have to face the music, though.
This is a shocker. This is a shocker. This is a shocker. So we're gonna talk about Spurs versus Newcastle. I think obviously I will. We'll obviously let the one side of the match talk first, and hopefully the other side can come back before we move on to Arsenal's game.
Wilson sold me dreams. Wilson sold me dreams. Yo, I was in
that stadium. I gotta say it was almost cruel. Yeah. And look, let's be honest, this was not vintage 100%. Spurs. This is not the best version of Tottenham. There were still the mistakes. There were still moments of indecision. There were periods of the game where we were kind of stodgy and not moving the ball very quick. But the truth is, that's good enough to beat Newcastle at the moment. The goal was well taken. Wilson got in front of the defender. You'd expect the defender to do a little bit more, but it was well finished. He got there, left the keeper with no chance. Really well taken. But it was fairly shortly after that, I would say by about the 10th minute, Spurs were back in control. They had a lot more of the ball. They did look more threatening. And when the goal came, very well taken by Ndombele. And I'm pleased to see
brilliantly
him getting back into the fold. He's a quality baller. And it's really cool to see him kind of... I think his fitness level still needs to get better because you don't see him do it for the full 90 just yet. He's not quite there.
I haven't seen him do it for a full season as well.
Yeah, I think that's partly to how Spurs have managed him over the last couple of years. I don't think they've really given him that run. Obviously Kane's finish was the kind of finish you'd expect Kane to do any day when he's on form. Given that it was his first one, I think it was a good sign. Obviously the VAR proving that it was played onside was important. I think, you know, to mention the incident that happened, I think it showed again that footballers have become really aware of these issues around the health of the player, the fans having the heart issues and stuff. And it was the players who alerted the officials to it so they could get the equipment up there. And last I heard, the guy was, they thought he would be making a full recovery and all of that. So, I think it was again, just a sign of how far footballers come in terms of taking these issues really seriously, which I think was fantastic. And credit to the players, they handled it very professionally. Obviously they left the field and kept themselves in the zone, came back, and the game was able to restart without much incident. And then obviously the Kane and Son combo, which we'd all been missing. It was really great to see them combine and get the third goal. I mean, the second half, Spurs went into that more stodgy mode that they've done. Then luckily Jonjo Selvi came on, but forgot to bring his brain with him, which I think had a big impact. On what happened.
That was a rubbish tackle. Wow, man.
The first one was, guys, even, I would say, more unnecessary because the first one, he's miles from his own box. Completely. It's like he just wanted to go. It's almost like he wanted to show the new owners, I'm a bit of a rough player.
Yeah.
And then he puts himself on the yellow.
It looked like he wanted to get off.
He does it again.
As soon as he came on, it looked like he wanted to get off. That's what it looked like. He's like, even he got the card.
It's
like,
deeper than we think. Maybe it's a protest action. Maybe he's actually feels very, very strongly about the new ownership, and he's going to get sent off every game in protest.
He definitely might lose his job a lot quicker this
week. I believe you then. Matt.
Yeah, and then
for I saw
Newcastle were fairly quiet until the own goal, and it was really only after that they kind of realised, look, we're playing Spurs. There's mistakes in this side. We could probably nick something, but we held on to the end. Like I said at the beginning, Nick, I know you missed it, but this wasn't vintage Spurs, but it was enough to beat Newcastle on the day, and I think. For us, the takeaway is you're not going to get away with that every week. Next week, we're playing West Ham. If we have the same kind of mistakes, if we have the same periods of not being intense, we will probably not come away winning that one. But I think for Newcastle, it's also a big kind of all the money in the world is not going to help if you end up getting relegated this season. So it's, there's a lot of work to do.
Yeah. To be honest with you, like I watched the game, and like the commentators were really like going crazy about how well Spurs played. And to be honest with you, like Kaiser Chiefs would have beaten Newcastle on that day. Like that's how poor we were. And it honestly just shows you, like, with all due respect though, like you can only play what's in front of you. So yeah, I mean, like, well deserved. You won the game, and Newcastle were never in the game besides the first minute of, or the first 2 minutes of the game where I thought we scored a well worked,
sort of goal, and we were on the front foot, and you know, it just proved that if you take games to teams, no matter who they are, you can really get something out of it. But you know, Bruce proved exactly why he shouldn't be in the job, and you know, tactically we were so inept. I mean, the midfield was just a complete highway, and we honestly looked exhausted by, I think, the 60th minute. I don't know if you noticed, Matt, but like our midfield was just walking around. And you know, then Bruce takes off Wilson. We lose in the game 3-1, and we take off Wilson and we put another midfielder on. And I'm just thinking, like, he's just scored a great goal. I mean, he scored like most of our goals this season, and he's only played 4 games. So I don't really understand the thinking. And defensively, you know, like a lot of people in the media and like a lot of fans who don't really understand Newcastle will say Steve Bruce did well. He's done better than Rafa Benitez, but you know what? Benitez had that exact same squad, and Bruce has added to it. He's added 4 or 5 players, and barring one player that he let go, who was our best centre half in Lejeune, you know, those players have gone backwards. Defensively, we were very hard to beat under Benitez, and we were very organised, and it's just so easy to score goals. I mean, some of those goals were schoolboy errors, like not stepping up when you're supposed to, or not applying pressure on the ball from a deep area. Yeah, so like, I just think it's just so poor, and it just shows you exactly what's needed at the club. You know, I'm not pushing panic buttons yet unless we keep Bruce for a significant period. Now, I think if we do make a change, a new voice in the change room, we'll get that group of players specifically, because I do think that group of players is better than at least 2 or 3, 4, 5 other teams in the league. I think individually, I think they are good enough to stay up. And I think if we can get to a January where we can spend, you know, potentially big money on some players that would be available, you know, we would, you know, I think we would be fine. But the longer this man stays in the job, we're going to be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, go for it, Nick. Matt.
No, I was going to say, like, you, some of the interplay, some of the interchanges between Wilson and Saint-Maximin, those were, I mean, they had some moments that were world class, you know, kind of, there was the one where Wilson got the ball, was able to pass it through, got it through, Royale's legs, and
we should have scored that, that should have made that 2-1,
But that, that connection, that kind of, I know he's going to make that run and stuff. That's clearly stuff they work on. That's not, but then, like you said, for him to be taken off, given what was going on in the game, given how
I have no idea what he's thinking of.
How tired the midfield was. Maybe he was just hoping to try and shore up the midfield. But it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's his first game back. I do understand. And like, that's what my dad actually said. Maybe he's just not fit enough. But I'm thinking, I don't give a shit. Like, you know, keep him on, even if you just tell him you don't press the ball, but just be in the box when we do get an opportunity,
how
and he'll score.
How many days on the grass did he have compared to Maguire?
Yeah. So like, I just, but like for me, I you know, tactically, I just don't see a plan. And I think, like I've said to you, a lot of those players have gone backwards. 2018, I was calling for Jamal Lasalle to be called up to the World Cup. Like, that's how good of a season he had under Benitez. Yeah. And he is honestly, he is a sad excuse for a captain for our club, and unfortunate, because I actually like him as a bloke. So, you know, for me, we need change quickly. Even though every single Premier League club is trying their best to block everything we do, it's ridiculous. But we've got our club back. We've got our club back, and you know, unfortunately, this is the way the world of sport works, and the way business sport is run as a business. I think it, and I did want to speak about this, but I did think it's pathetic seeing how 18 clubs can come to a vote to block a 3-week period off, so no commercial deals can be signed. Why?
That's ridiculous.
Because you guys wanted to go form a Super League not even 3-4 months ago, and now you guys are, sorry, 5 months ago, and now you guys are trying your best to kill the competition. It's ridiculous. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Isn't it ironic that Man City was the one club that abstained?
Because
they've been benefiting.
They've been through that.
Yeah.
They've been doing that. They've been doing it. So, and listen, you know, I follow a few of the lawyers that ran our case, our competition case that actually, you know, caught the Premier League with their pants down and eventually got the deal approved. They've mentioned like this has to go to UEFA. UEFA is the body that will make a decision on this if it does go further than the 3 week period. And UEFA themselves have the exact same sort of deals with specific countries and specific sponsorship. So, you know, if they want to open this can of worms, they just, but in essence, you know, some of the clubs are just a bit bitter. I can understand why. But you know, what?
I don't think it's a majority of them.
But
you,
I think, yeah,
it's also,
yeah,
for me, the hypocrisy of it is that the Premier League was asked by people like Human Rights Watch and all of these guys to say something about the takeover and act on. And you look, the debate about that is neither here nor there. The truth is that it shouldn't be up to sport to implement these policies when governments are doing deals with Saudi Arabia anyway. They're being allowed to do whatever they want. We can't expect sport to arbitrate it. But for then the Premier League to not heed those calls, not to make any mention around that stuff, but then to come in on the commercial side and argue about that just shows the hypocrisy. Like we're going to be completely blind to human rights issues. But as soon as we see that there's potentially a disparity in the money, that's when we're going to jump in. And I think hypocrisy, just like the Super League thing, for me is just...
And it's completely anti-competitive to what current deals, current Premier League clubs have with other stakeholders. So, for example, Man United right now have, I don't know if it's expired, but they had a huge deal with a Saudi Arabian company, a commercial deal. And Man United was one of the whistleblowers, obviously, for the takeover not to go through. And together with them and Liverpool now have called for this meeting that happened yesterday, and they had a vote. And it just sounds so weird. You know, there's going to be a 3 week suspension on commercial rights deals so they can outline the laws in which clubs can sign these deals. Wow. And it just, for me, it just, you know, only now, you know, like Mike Ashley had Sports Direct and flannels and House of Fraser's branded all over our stadium for 14 years and we never received a cent for it. It was just, it was completely free advertising for him. But how does that benefit the club?
Come on.
Yeah, we've got the glamour of the fucking white, blue, white and red banners all over our stadium. Sports, you know, Direct. Like what for me, like it is unfortunate, but you know, it's not, you know, putting me down. I'm still very excited. There is chatter on Twitter at the moment that there is talk that Steve Bruce might be already sacked and we are waiting for a announcement. But one of the main Sky Sports presenters actually, he tweeted the eyes emoji and then, a lot of people screen grabbed it and then he deleted it. So he probably did that and he was told to take it down. Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure as to what is going on.
They were giving Bruce, they were giving Bruce his
1,000th match
game. Yeah. That's it. That was all.
So from what I understand, I always thought that, but from what I'm reading is his contract was very difficult to, it was a very complicated situation. There's an £8 million payout. So obviously that's Steve, you know, if Steve Bruce, no, yeah, but if Steve Bruce is such a fan, you know, like as he says, I'm the one who wants, as everyone does, the club to succeed. You know, if he really did, I think he would have walked, especially after all the hate that he's got from the fans. No. So,
if I had the Spurs job, I'd want Spurs to win. But if it was a case of quit or take £8 million,
So exactly, Matt. So like, that's what I'm trying to say to you. Like, he's not sort of acting in the way that he claims he is, this massive fan of the club that wants the club to do well. He's hanging in as long as he can so he can get his payout. And, you know, I'm sure he won't even return to football after this. You know, I think it would have scarred him, or he'd probably go to the championship or something like that.
For me, it's, I was just wanted to get back on the point, like with the, you know, with these guys, with the hypocrisy and stuff. I saw, the interview with Jurgen Klopp Where he said it's like he likened it to the Super League, you know. He said that it's just now it's just one team, and I said, my goodness me! I mean, the centre back is £80 million, you know.
Yeah.
Then you've got your. I mean, the truth about it is that no other team. I mean,
the most expensive goalkeeper.
Man United. Yeah, they've got the most expensive goalkeeper, you know. And for me, it's like, oh, now it's okay when you spend £80 million or close to £200 million to fix your team, but a team mustn't be able, another team mustn't be able to do three or four times more than you're able to do it. You know, where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, people need to, they need to sort their.
I think
their
the reality is I think a lot of the bigger teams are scared. I think it's just more competition. Yeah. So less of a chance of actually solidifying a top four spot every single season. You know, it's already difficult as we know. But I do think there's a specific agenda against Newcastle from what it looks like. Like, I mean, you know, kick it out, the campaign against shut out racism has come out now and asked for an inquiry as to why the fans were wearing Arabian. And like I just retweeted something, you guys must watch it, read it. It's a journalist from Saudi Arabia or somewhere in the sort of Gulf nations sort of said this is absolutely ridiculous, like we actually find it endearing, you know, and quite comical, because you know, at the end of the day, you know, if an Arab person wears Western clothing, like there's no campaign against
weren't they embracing them? Or for me, it's almost like you're embracing them rather than even
it's
far from it.
Fans doing it, they're doing it as a
you're taking the culture.
Yeah, I think they would be doing it as an attack. You know, if other clubs did it whenever they went to Newcastle, then I think it would be an attack.
Yeah, that would be. But if you're doing it to embrace it, yeah.
Yeah,
then I don't necessarily see the challenge there.
And if you take anything from the electricity that was running around the stadium on the day, it'd be difficult to see that, you know, fans were wearing those headgears as kind of like trying to offend the Saudi nation.
Yeah, not at all. But I think, guys, just to close off on the Newcastle matter, like I just want you guys to know and everyone else that's watching. You know, there's a stigma attached to Newcastle fans now. Oh, we're going to sign Mbappe. We're going to sign Ronaldo. We're going to sign X, Y, and Z. But we're actually just happy that today, for the first time in 14 years, they're cleaning the windows at St. James's Park. And I'm not even joking. Like, they got a cleaning service to come in. And like, you know those high-rising windows
awesome,
where you got to actually
awesome. –
And there was a joke. They were like, there was a joke going around that the 18 Premier League clubs voted against the company that they used, and they need to get someone else in. So, it's quite comical. It's quite comical at the moment. But yeah, we're just happy. You know, we've got a direction now. Hopefully, I think the first step is getting rid of Bruce, and then hopefully we can get someone with a little bit of pedigree. And yeah. Hopefully, I'll be up the table ahead of Wonga soon enough and competing with you lads.
On that, I think, like, you know, it isn't panic buttons or panic stations in Newcastle at the moment, but it may be helpful to press those buttons earlier than later, right? You're only going to have, like, if you wait till January, it's halfway through the season, and then it's like, it's very difficult for even a new manager to sort it around.
Bro, I agree, and I think you need to get the manager now. But I'm no fool to say that he's got to get those players. You know, the players are going to remain for 11 games. It's 11 games until, you know, he's got to get it right. And if he doesn't get it right, if he can get it right to an extent where we're in a position where we can still survive, you know, I don't see why he can't just pull the trigger with the new owners and buy, you know, spend that £200 million to get a squad that can compete and potentially, you know, get up the table. And who knows, you know, towards the end of the season, teams move from like 17th all the way up to like 9th or 10th. I mean, Newcastle win a relegation battle till the last three games and we finished 12th. So like it is possible, but you're right. You don't want to leave it too late, but I do think they will do their homework. And I think if we're in a really poor position, you know, you might see them spending more than they probably budgeted for, just so we can save the status. But you know, seven games in, eight games in, you would like someone in new for the weekend, a fresh idea, fresh ideas, a fresh voice. And, you know, hopefully that is the difference between our 1-1s this season or our, you know, we've been in the lead, I think, the most times with Bruce and we've ended up losing. I think it was like 15 or 20% of the matches that he's coached with us, we've been in the lead and we've lost, some crazy stuff like that. So like at the end of the day, we need a change and hopefully it comes.
No, that's cool. No, I think let's touch on the last game of the weekend where the former captain of Arsenal was facing the current coach, who's also a former captain of Arsenal, and then Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's the captain of Arsenal, scored the first goal. A lot of things going on in that game. I think we can safely say that Crystal Palace has been reborn in terms of the performances this season, showing, you know, good signs of football. But obviously, I think the against Brighton, they should have won, and they conceded in the last couple of minutes, and in this game they should have won as well. And
Their consistency is what's letting them down at the moment. Palace are really good for long periods, but their consistency and there's little mistakes that's costing them. And if they don't get that right, like Nick said, there's a lot of change that happens in the log. You could see someone getting sucked into relegation. Look what happened to Hull City back in the day. They started the season at a flyer. They were, at one point, people were talking about them for Europe, and they ended up getting relegated in that same season because they weren't nailing down the consistency. So I do think Palace have something to do. This is a game they should have won.
They've got the most draws.
They definitely should have won.
They've got five draws so far this season.
I don't know what games you guys are watching, but anyways.
Palace with a better team yesterday.
Palace were the better team, but I actually feel like the manager could have cost them. You know, it was the manager, former captain going back to
Wonga wasn't watching
Emirates.
The same game as us.
No, Wonga is in denial. Leave his denial. I think if I looked at that Palace team at the 75th minute, or maybe the 70th minute, 65th minute, they still had a lot of energy going forward with players like Edward and Milanovic. In the middle. And the changes that were made were very defensive, but I feel like there might have been a flaw actually from Patrick Vieira on the day. They were in the ascendancy and they were looking good, and he pulled out those elements from the team which had a lot of energy and were giving them that stability in the midfield. He brought on a Kouyaté and a defender when replacing a centre mid and a striker. And for me, they had to sit deep now. Like, even Benteke had to come very, very deep to kind of protect the result. But doing that for 20 minutes isn't really the most exciting idea for most teams. You know, it's a very difficult thing to do. And it creates opportunities and invites opponents to come and look in for opportunities. And yeah, I think they were great in a lot of parts, Crystal Palace. But in this instance, I don't think it's been spoken about enough, the fact that potentially the manager did make a mistake. The players came to the party and did well, but then those kind of defensive changes. Yeah, like with 20 minutes to go, while and Arsenal is trying to apply pressure, it just didn't sit too well with me, in my view.
Yeah, let's see what
I heard the ref paid an extra. He played an extra minute there. They had a corner, they cleared it, and then what's going on there?
He played an extra 30 seconds. He played the extra 40 seconds for Arsenal. I think, Arsenal, eh? Listen, Wonga, the thing is, Ned, you're probably thinking that we watched a different game, right? But I am saying that Palace earned their two goals. They didn't get them by a fluke. I think that in the first half, Palace definitely could have gotten a goal in the first half. And I think, obviously, there was some good saves from the keeper that you don't like in your team. And in the second half, they continued and they got the two goals and it was leading 2-1. And I think, you know, as Musa said, is that I think maybe Vieira shouldn't have made those defensive substitutions. And yeah, Palace are going to give a lot of teams some trouble this season.
Mm. Yeah, look, you see, for me, when I look at this game, yeah, sure. I mean, Palace, yeah, they put the pressure. And deservedly, they got the goals. Can't deny that. But, I mean, even Arsenal as well. I think they, even to get their goals as well, they put the pressure on Crystal Palace. The first goal as well was a very good, well worked goal. We passed the guys. I mean, it was, for me, what I liked about the goal is the fact, again, it was Pepe. good combination with Tomiyasu, gets in the box, takes a shot. I think the keeper does poorly with that save of his in terms of getting it out of danger. He puts it right into Bomyang's path. Bomyang does very well to put it in from that angle also. But, like, if you're going to say Crystal Palace deserved to win more than Arsenal, hey, it's not, I mean, Chelsea got a, that for me is clear. Like, you banging that team and everyone is, you know, the keeper's there, the defense is there, but Chelsea gets away with the win. That for me, yeah, I mean, even Musa can say it, but the Crystal Palace game, you're going to tell me that we're supposed to be the ones that were supposed to go down with the loss. For me, I saw what hasn't happened and, that's why I look at it. For me, it's a positive. It hasn't happened in about six, seven games for us. You know, we started the season poorly in terms of our defense, but here comes one game in the season where we've allowed Crystal Palace's press. I mean, we're very casual. Thomas Partey was very casual when he got the ball there and they pinched it from him and then they went to go score, you know? And I think for me, that's the poor side of what Arsenal did that game. And I think we did good to rescue the point as well. Something we wouldn't have also done beginning of the season. That's why I think it's a positive for me. But and I think those, that's what I will take away from this game. Yes, I wanted to win. We one point behind Man United. And then, you know, and they're telling us that we're also a team that's struggling out there.
fighting relegation.
But we're not far off, far from them, you know. So, but that's why I look at the game. But I, there's no way I would admit that Crystal Palace deserves to come more than us come out that game with the win. If it's a fair result, was a draw, that game. That's the honest truth about it. And I'm happy.
I get what you're saying, Manga. I actually get what you're saying. As I was coming into the show, I actually thought like it was Crystal Palace's to win. But the fact that you guys kept on pressing them and kept on pushing them and kept on applying the pressure is a very good element to see from your players.
So one thing, Odia Musa, that's one thing you've reminded me. The one thing I was not happy about, you saw, I don't know if you guys watched the whole game, but Aubameyang, it's from the first to the final whistle, that guy was pressing every single player. He was pressing. Right. What I can't understand.
Going to fetch the ball from his own half.
Yes, he was even defending. He went to go. You saw he was actually doing other people's jobs. You could see sometimes he would come and cover in for who was playing on the, I think Saka. He went to go do Saka's job to go defend. Saka never went back. He went back. Then as soon as he won the ball back, he went and attacked. Then everyone went and attacked. What I can't understand is surely if he's doing this, I can't understand why no one else in the team, maybe Smith Rowe is the second player who's doing that. I can't understand why no one else in the team is trying to, you know, back up what he's trying to be doing. Or why isn't he telling the other guys to pick up what they're doing, to pick up the intensity. Even, Lacazette, when Lacazette comes on, you know, he's trying to rile up the crowd. He should be riling up the players, you know, and I'm not, he came on with good energy. And I think that's why he ends up getting the goal. He looked like he was going to get a goal when he came on, you know, but why aren't they telling the other players to step up? Because those two goals we conceded was, because we're taking things easy. We're not conceding. We're not going to concede today.
I'm surprised you haven't mentioned Lukonga's mistake as well. We need to highlight that as well. You know, I think your midfielders in this game, if it was Xhaka, we would have started the show with Xhaka's.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Lukonga and Partey lost the ball. How you guys considered goals.
Yes. Two midfielders. And understand, but you see now with the Lukonga, it's the first time he's done it. It's number one. And I'm watching. You best believe it. I'm watching. It's number one. Xhaka has done number 20 already. Xhaka has done number 20. You can't have any more. I don't want any more. So, I remember I did say Xhaka's gone. Now Lukonga has that time to prove himself. But the one thing I also understand is some Arsenal fans, I don't know what, like Guendouzi has a good game. You know, he scores a goal there for Marseille. And I watched it. I mean, he played goals. Well. He scored two goals. But now what the hell does that have to do with Lukonga? You know, the guy was at Arsenal. He's fighting. He's pulling people's hair. We don't want that, bro. We don't want that. No, no.
What about What about Saliba?
Go play in the Farmers League. Saliba. Saliba.
He never touched the field, but that's another topic for another day.
But Saliba definitely should play ahead of Ben White.
But I think let's talk about the big elephant. Let's talk about the big elephant.
Your £50 million centre back.
Let's talk about Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale has obviously been a guy that you don't want to be in the goals, and obviously the second goal, people feel that he could have done better. I feel that he was somewhat unsighted because the ball came behind the defender. So it kind of Edward played it around the defender.
Tell Mendy that.
Obviously the straight.
Tell Mendy that.
No, man.
Mendy saves things flying from under everywhere.
You can't compare the best with the
one
the
save
relegation fighters.
It's literally
Leno, we've got Leno on the bench. That's what I'm trying to tell you. We've got Leno on the bench.
You reckon Leno would have saved that? I don't know. Leno's had some howlers in his time.
He has.
No, how many howlers has Leno had? It's probably like one or two.
I don't know. What am I watching Arsenal for?
I've got real football to watch.
Guys. Ramsdale, the worrying thing about Ramsdale for me is not even the saves, like even before he gets he looks scared, bro. He looks scared. It's like he doesn't that shot to come to him.
Nick, as a goalkeeper, what do you think of Ramsdale's performance? Like, maybe you haven't watched him in total.
No, I think he's quality. I think Leno is also a good goalkeeper, but like I said a few weeks ago, I mean, you know, Ramsdale took his chance, and unfortunately, he's not going to leave until he has a proper howler. But he'd be taken out, you know. He wants to play for England, playing for a team like Arsenal, who he probably thought was a big club, but probably not anymore. You know, he needs to be playing Premier League football and not in the Championship. So, yeah, listen, I think Ramsdale's a quality keeper. I didn't see the incident that you guys are talking about. You know what? We might just take Leno as a second choice at Newcastle, and he might just make quite a bit of money. So, you know, like that, that's okay, I guess. He can play for under-23s.
Also, Ramsdale did do a lot in the game, dude, to save you guys. Like, there were a couple of opportunities. Yeah. Like Conor Gallagher's volley where he was unsighted there, and he made a great save for you guys.
Look, wasn't he supposed to be sent off, by the way?
Huh?
They should have had a red card, to be fair.
He should have had a red card.
But
the incident is open.
But if we touch, before we touch on that, Vance is saying something very valid, guys. Arsenal sold their best keeper to Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Arsenal sold their best keeper. Emiliano Martinez is at Aston Villa, and that's Arsenal's best keeper.
But when a big club comes in for a player, you can't say no.
You can't stop them.
You can't stop them.
I think they were fighting relegation as well.
They can't hold him. They can't hold Martinez back from his...
They can't.
Let the man shine.
His dream move to Aston Villa.
He's slumming it.
To be fair on Ramsdale, I mean, Arsenal's problems were not on that game. It's not his fault. I think now they left it all the way to him. But it's 100% defense and midfield were they're getting back to those. I don't know what's creeping into them, but it looked they looked very too relaxed. Only Aubameyang looked fired up to win, and like I said, when he came on, also Smith Rowe. Yeah. The rest, Saka.
We said during lockdown we suspected that Aubameyang had been switched for an evil twin. I think they found the real one again.
Because
remember, there was long periods where it looked like he didn't know what football was. He'd just wander around the field. It would like hit him in the head, you know. But now he's back to himself. It's intermittent so far, but if he could carry on that form, he could look like the player he looked like, 2 years ago now. Arsenal needs that. They need someone who's got that energy. It's not just because Xhaka comes with an energy. He's very shouty and
They
need players who are actually going to do footballing work. You know, run around.
Yeah, but he just did the field to like.
And that's what Aubameyang is doing. That's what he did. That's what he did last night. But whether or not they can continue to do it,
And I agree, like even players like Lacazette, when he came on, it's actually they were the supposed to be the guys who were pallbearers of the responsibility at Arsenal. It was never supposed to be given to kids like Saka.
Pallbearers.
So, they're the big boys, dog, in the team.
I don't understand. Why do you have pallbearers? Like,
no, like the boys who are carrying the dog, they're carrying the dead team. That coffin everywhere. But like somebody has to do it right, and it's generally the senior players who have some accolades under their belts that would do it. You'd never expect it to come from the juniors, and that's what's been happening at Arsenal. A lot of the time it's the kids saving the day. It's Smith Rowe, Odegaard, Martinelli coming through and actually galvanizing the entire Arsenal outfit to go and seek results over the past two seasons even. And it's good to have seen Lacazette come with that energy onto the field, where he was now kind of taking that responsibility to lift everybody's intensity up and get everybody going, which is, it's refreshing to see. They should be doing it week in, week out for the guys.
I think like the most important thing for me is that Wonga is actually defending his team, like building them up. Like even when you guys beat us, you were kind of non-committal. Like, yeah, it was okay, but there's still lots to do. Here, you drew 2-2. We're like Arsenal at a mare. And you're like, no, Arsenal are on the up. And I think that's good. Mentally, I think it bodes well for Arsenal fans. I think there was a lot of depression.
We're all about mental health here. We're all about Wonga's mental health.
Yeah,
like, I think, we'll still be here for you, Wonga, when you get the relegation.
just to wrap up, any one of the final thoughts? I think let's definitely start with the man with all the money in the world right now, and then Matt, and then Musa, then Wong, and then myself. What's your final thoughts, Mr. Moneybags?
I think it's a classic cool down show for me, talking about a Newcastle loss. So nothing's changed there. But my bank balance is looking a lot healthier. And it's a nice thing to wake up to every morning, knowing that we could potentially have the biggest stars in the world in the next couple of seasons. So yeah, I'm excited. Cool show again. Hopefully we can get our first win against Palace. It's not going to be easy on Saturday, but we'll talk about that on Thursday. Hopefully with a new coach.
Fingers crossed.
I just hope the coach you guys get in is as disappointing. Like, I hope it's Arteta or something.
Ole.
So do all you teams. All of you.
Go get Ole. Go buy Ole, boys.
Yeah.
No chance.
But are those your final thoughts, Matt?
Yes, you had I think let's start touting Arteta for the Newcastle job. #Arteta in.
Arteta in. Man
United, even with all the challenges they had with logistics and injuries in the squad, I think they should have been better on the day. And that's all down to one thing, that there's Ole at the wheel, and they should get Ole out. There's another reminder of Ole out this past weekend from my side.
Ole out.
Out of here. He must out.
Look, what Mandla said there perfectly, we 5 games unbeaten, and I think that's important. We need Arsenal, but I think we're very relaxed in this game. And it shouldn't, I mean, the win against Tottenham, I think even like Matt would admit that Tottenham were nowhere. You know, they were literally nowhere. And I don't think we must take that as a thing that we can probably compete with the other guys. And also another interesting thing, I don't know if you guys heard, our £50 million signing, said, opened in an interview that he didn't watch much of Vieira. Doesn't know Vieira.
How dare you?
Doesn't know Patrick, in terms of Patrick Vieira, the way he plays, his strengths and what.
Imagine that
just shocked the cack out of me, bro. And he signed that guy for £50 million, and he couldn't even take out a video or YouTube thing to check out Patrick Vieira. But anyways,
and there's something wrong if he wasn't watching football growing up then, and he could be caught out in a lot of positions because he hasn't been analyzing.
And
we football,
bought him for
£50 million back in those days. Like it could have just been that he was, you know.
How do you miss Patrick Vieira?
No worries.
Patty Vieira.
He's 24 years old, man. Come on.
It's a 5 years.
Bro, my brother's 24. My brother knows who Patty Vieira is, bro. Come on, everyone knows who Patty is.
By chance that they saw those guys. It's the epitome of
midfield maestros when he was six, you know?
Like, he stays in England. it's the only league you want to play for. Like, how would you make the excuse? Like, goodness me.
If he wasn't watching at six, I'm concerned.
Maybe he never had a TV. Maybe he didn't have a TV, guys. Let's not assume.
Yeah, people have different upbringings. Maybe he lived in a treehouse. It was a happy family gathering.
50 million down the drain.
Yeah,
should have gone and looked. It's 50 million.
Yeah. Everyone who was tuning into tonight's show, thinking that we're going to give away the shirt today. Yeah, we're going to give it away on Thursday. Apologies for the delay. So if you haven't entered the competition, you still have 2 days to enter the competition. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram and comment with who do you think has been the best Premier League player so far this season. But yeah, thanks everyone who's been on the show tonight and commented. Manga, Claudio, Pums, Sam, Vads.
Thursday Night Outcast.
Jason as well. I saw somewhere there as well. We'll see you guys on Thursday. And let's see what the Premier League teams do in the Champions League. Those who do play Champions League and those who play other leagues that we don't even know how they are comprised of Conference League. All the best to your team as well.
Careful, Silo. You might be playing Thursday night sometime.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, gents.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Hey.